Hello, welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. It's me, Sean. I'm here on my own here, Sunday morning Amsterdam. We're slightly delayed with the publishing of the podcast. Usually come out on a Wednesday, but we're here. And this morning I've been interviewing Elsie Davis. So Elsie is one of the top marathon runners in Great Britain. She is lining up in this year's London Marathon in the women's elite field. We've spoke to a few of the girls that are running the elite field over the years at Let's Get Running. So we wanted to pick up someone new we haven't spoken to before. And Elsie is having a great season. We're really excited about what she can do in 2020. So we're going to pick her brains about her training. She's coming up in a minute. If you guys have any questions about marathon running or want to discuss marathon running, any aspect of it, we've got a show next week where we're going to be doing sort of more of a panel discussion. Get involved with that. Get in touch at letsgetrunning.co.uk for any questions or hints or topics you want to talk about. Anywhere on social media. You should be able to find us at Let's Get Running. Always good to hear your thoughts. If you want to send us a recorded WhatsApp line, please do that. You can go on our show notes, letsgetrunning.co.uk/podcast, and you'll be able to see our recorded WhatsApp line. Send us a WhatsApp. Be nice to hear your voices. We play them out live on the show. Otherwise, send us a review. We always like that sort of stuff. And have a good week. Oh, I should say, National Cross Country, great race yesterday. Some really exciting racing. We'll talk more about that on the show, which comes out on Wednesday. But some really fun and exciting racing. But one story I noticed was Adam Hickey came in fourth after running the first lap of this very muddy Cross Country. If you see the pictures anywhere, you can see how bad it is. He ran the first lap without his shoe on, found his shoe, put it on, still came fourth in National Cross. So he was one of my picks earlier in this series for someone who's going to run well at London this year, and he looks like he's if he can manage to keep his shoes on, he's going to run well this year in London. Anyway, here we go. We're going to talk to Elsie now. Let's hear her thoughts about marathon and marathon running. Here she is. So on this morning show, I'm catching up with Elsie Davis on a Sunday morning when you should be making furniture. Is that right, Elsie?
That's right.
I've dragged you away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Thankfully.
So you're obviously in the midst of marathon training. How's that all going?
Yeah, it's good. It's right in the middle of it. It's a bit better this time around because I'm not coming off the back of an injury. So I'm kind of starting with the fitness from the last marathon.
Great.
So every kind of week I'm doing it, I'm stronger than I was in the last sort of build up. So
yeah,
it's kind of, it's good confidence.
Yeah. And it's obviously now you must, how many weeks do we have? We got 10 or so weeks.
I think it's like 70 days. I only know that because somebody put it on Instagram the other day. But it's about like 65, so 70 days, something like that.
This is the London Marathon. You managed to get yourself into the elite field at London. How does it, like, obviously a lot of pressure comes with that. How does it feel to be part of that kind of, that esteemed bunch of people?
It's exciting, yeah. And especially this year, sort of it being Olympic year, it's, you know, the field's amazing. Possibly the best sort of British field there's ever been.
Yeah.
So that's really cool to be a part of. I have run on the elite start once before, actually. But I dropped out because I was injured. So okay. And I kind of went into it knowing I wasn't very fit, so I couldn't enjoy it as much.
Yeah, okay.
But it was even then, it was amazing, the experience. It was kind of mind-blowing, really.
Yeah. And do you think that brings the fact that it is, you know, a separate race to the main field race and everything else, does that bring added pressure to you? Does it make it a different challenge to you as a runner going into that?
A little bit, yeah. I always find that in marathons and half marathons, a lot of the guys around you will help you, and you know that they'll most of the time block the wind for you. And even one marathon, I had a guy passing me drinks the whole way. Wow. You know, that sort of thing. So it does help having guys around. But equally, like, it's at least you know where you are in the field when it's just women. You kind of, you know that whoever the breathing you can hear behind you is a woman, and it's more of a race. And I'm very used to running on my own if I do end up on my own, which is a high possibility. So if that happens, then I'm sort of prepared. And you're not really on your own, I suppose. You've got the streets of London cheering you on. So
yeah. And I was going to say, does that play into your foot? Because some people are racers. Some people they like to run in a pack. They like that thing of they just go over there and they aim for their times and they're looking at their splits and stuff. Are you the kind of person that thrives thinking, I am in a battle, in a race against other people and I've just got to beat that bloody person up in front of me? Is that more to your favour or would you prefer to sort of, are you someone who's quite structured in their pacing and thinks, you know, I've got to hit certain splits to be in the right place?
I know my limits and I know what pace I can do, and I think in a marathon build up you really learn what you know you can hold for 26.2 miles, without the risk. So I'm more like I will know sort of, you know, I know what I can do and I'll still be on the edge, but I kind of like to run within what I know is my limits. I think if I start to try and race somebody in a marathon, I don't know, it has a big risk, and you do all that work to take such a big risk, I don't know, it's not worth it for me. So I like to, I think, you know, I'll get a better idea closer to time what pace I know I can do, and I'll probably kind of just get my head down and stick to that pace and kind of hope that there's other girls around me who are in that same sort of rhythm.
And what does it look like now then? So we're 70 days out, what's your focus for the next few weeks? Obviously you have a training plan that you're working from your coach, but what are the main key ingredients to your training at this point in your training schedule?
Miles, lots of miles. I think it's very much volume at the minute. Just building up a really good base. And like I said, I'm in a much better place than I was before Valencia because I was kind of coming off the back of not being very fit, whereas now I'm able to build on the base I already had. So it's kind of a lot of marathon pace stuff. This week I've run, in 7 days I've done 4 long runs.
Wow.
Which is not usual. I don't know.
What's a long run for you? What constitutes long?
Well, I suppose my shortest long run this week was 13 miles, but then on Sunday I did 23. And then on Wednesday, I did a session, which ended up being nearly 18 miles.
Wow.
And then Thursday was the 13 miles. And then yesterday, I did nearly 19 miles.
Okay.
Again, as another session.
Yeah. Wow.
Just lots of
What's the other days then? Are you mostly recovering in those days in between these big hard efforts?
Yeah. So we only, you know, learning from previous kind of build-ups and injuries, I've kind of settled into doing 2 main sessions a week, and normally one of those will be within a long run,
right?
And the runs in between are easier. I do like to go and run on the mountain, so often I'll have a few 10 mile runs in the week where I'll end up driving somewhere that's quite mountainous, and it'll be kind of like an hour and a half and 10 miles, but really slow and easy.
Yeah, okay.
As easy as it can be when you're running up a steep hill.
Yeah.
I like to change the stimulus underfoot. I think it's good for the body to kind of go in different directions, because a lot of the long run stuff that you're doing at pace is in one direction, and I kind of worry about the stress that has on my bones because of previous injuries.
Yeah, but you're a one run a day trainer. You tend to have just one session per day.
No, I probably do about 3 double runs a week.
Okay.
Yeah, double run days a week.
And how are you fitting this? Because you're a doctor. What exactly is the role you're doing?
So I just started a new job. I just moved to Stockport, and I've got a job as a GP trainee.
Okay. How are you managing this, the training alongside the GP training? Because it's long hours, right, being a doctor? You must be working 50, 60 hours a week.
Yeah, so I used to work full-time. Yeah. And then in the last few years, I've gone down to... It's quite a good thing now within sort of our contract. You can apply to work a less than full-time rota. So
right.
At the minute, I'm doing 60% of a full-time rota, which works really well for me.
Yeah, okay.
And they've allowed that because of running commitments. And you can do it if, you know, you've got family or other things, but they've been really good and allowed it because of the running.
Okay. So it's going in running, getting into work, and having to listen to problems from Stockport's sick and unwell all day.
Yeah, I'm not actually in GP practice yet. I'm still in the hospital.
Okay.
So it's kind of ward rounds and looking after unwell patients.
Okay.
The ward. Yeah.
I was going to ask how many patients you've had come in asking if they've got the coronavirus in the last couple of weeks. Whether that's been...
I think my wife works. She's an A&E consultant, so she gets more of that. I think she had somebody who shook hands with somebody a few weeks ago coming in and asking if they might have coronavirus. So she has to deal with that sort of thing.
God, it's going to be mad for a couple of years, I'd imagine. But hey, luckily you've only got 60% of a working week to get through rather than 100%. But
yeah.
But
it averages out about 30 hours a week.
So okay. So it's still for most people, that's almost a full-time job. Do you manage to fit in then with your train? Do you commute into work? How do you make these kind of big miles you're doing work around the work that you're doing? Do you find it difficult?
No, because I suppose I love both things. I think that's the most important thing of how I manage to balance them, is that I enjoy both of them. And I get up and I want to do both. So, you know, obviously not every morning I'm raring to go, but most of the time I just get up sort of early-ish and then go straight out as soon as I get home. And then I find that one gives me relief from the other. So if I've had a stressful day at work, going for a run helps with that. And then if I've got a big session to do in the evening, actually I find work's quite a good distraction, because otherwise we'll sit there ruminating about it and worrying about if I'm going to hit paces. And I found, even when I went on training camp and wasn't working, I actually found it really difficult.
Really?
Because I overthought every session and put loads of pressure on it. Whereas if I've got work and, you know, you kind of get a good perspective on things working in hospital as well, of how, you know, important, as great as running is, as sort of great as it is, it's not the be all and end all. And it's good for perspective as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of speaking about your training, like your training with Helen Clitheroe, who British listeners of this will know as a great 1500 meter runner, even a 3K cross country runner back in the day, but not someone that necessarily runs marathons. Like, how is that? How does that work? First question should be: is how does her success and her, because she's quite a charismatic person, how does that inspire you as a runner?
Yeah, a lot. I find it's good to be coached by someone you know has kind of been there and done it done it really well.
Yeah.
Kind of take, you know, our relationship started with me having a lot of respect for her, and it's just built from there. So it's good.
Yeah. And when did you start working with her? Was it in the last couple of years?
It was 2017.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And how did she change your training? So before that, it's probably better for us to go back to look at your kind of running career as well. When did you originally start kind of this marathon thing, or even just kind of get involved with running? When was your first kind of taste of running? How did you get into it originally?
I ran cross country at school.
Yeah.
I wasn't very fast at all. I was part of a really good school running team, so we won as a school team, won the nationals a few years in a row.
Wow.
And I was the last counter of that team.
Okay.
And
that was down in Cornwall.
In Cornwall, yeah. Penair School. They had a good name for themselves back in the day.
Was it with Zoe Gelbert? Was that the kind of, is that the same?
I recognise that name.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I remember her being Nuki and Parr when I was a junior, but it's probably a different.
Yeah, I recognise her.
Yeah, but that was the initial start in running.
Yeah, yeah. And the coach there kind of valued the last, you know, the last counter as much as the first counter. So actually, you know, it was really good. And although I wasn't the fastest, I really enjoyed training. And then I guess I kind of moved away from it a little bit when I went to college and then medical school, discovered going out and having fun. And I guess because I wasn't that good at school, I didn't think that I had any real potential. So I just kind of left it there. You know, I think I did the nationals. I think I was towards the last at the nationals and at school. You're definitely sort of 150 onwards.
Yeah.
And then I decided I wanted to run a marathon just for fun. It's like a bucket list thing, I suppose. And my dad does a lot of running, and he's 60 now, and he still runs under 3 hours for a marathon.
Wow.
So he said he'd come and do my long runs with me every Sunday. So I started doing that. And essentially every long run was done on a hangover. And then I did Paris was my first marathon I did when I think I was 22. Mm. So I think that was probably the only run I did without a hangover, and I felt all right by the actual marathon. I did 3:47, which is pretty good for a first shot.
Yeah.
Just a few runs a week.
Like a non-runner's background sort of thing.
Yeah. I've got some photos of it, and when I show people, their jaw drops. I don't look like a different person.
Yeah. But what happened at that point then? Did you get a bit of a bug from it?
I guess so. I just decided I wanted to do marathons in a different country. I didn't really, think about the progression. And then I went from it. I did a 3:47. I think went down. Then the next year I did 3:30. Yeah. And then I did 3:15 the year after. And then I started doing maybe 3 or 4 runs a week, and I went down to 2:58. And then that was when I got a coach and things started to get a bit more serious.
So what was there? Because you're saying you didn't really particularly have any other talent for it at school. What do you think you've got then? What is your strength that has made you be able to take this on and go from 3:35, whatever, to running 2:30?
Probably determination. I still don't really see myself as naturally talented. I think I just when I want to do something, I'm kind of quite headstrong in doing it. And things like even getting into med school, I wasn't very clever at school, and I was told I wouldn't ever get in. But I just got my head down and proved them wrong. So wow. I think it's a determination thing, and I think if you love something enough and you're determined enough, I think you have to have an element of natural ability, but it's not the majority of it.
And so then with Helen, sort of in 2017, how did she change your training? What changes did she make to you that enabled you to make this huge jump?
I think I was just smashing it a bit too much before. Right. I was just I was living in Cornwall, and I was doing 3 big sessions a week, and then in between those sessions I was running really hard on the coast path, not really, on my watch I'd be like, oh, it's easy pace, but I would just I just love running as fast as possible on the coast path, which is probably a more stress on your body than doing reps around the field. I think I wasn't very clued up, and Helen put a really big emphasis on having a physio as well. So I was trying to just muddle through without a physio before, getting injured but not really having a proper rehab program. Whereas now, as soon as I get a niggle, Helen won't really listen to me about it. She'll just say, what does your physio say? So we don't try and muddle through little niggles. It's straight to physio. Is it okay to run, isn't it? And it's just being more sensible like that. I guess those are the main things.
And do you notice, because obviously she was quick, and she from a 1500 meter background, are there elements of that as she gets you to work on speed and stuff more than you previously did? Are you doing lots of strides and that sort of thing?
No, probably less. I guess the only way it shines through is that she's able to jump in on the shorter reps with me still. So she can still bust it out if she wants to. So we did 20 times 400 the other day, and it was absolutely bleak. It was when it was the storms and hail, and she jumped in on 20 of the 200s. She's pretty comfortably.
Yeah, she's still got it. Yeah.
So that really helps.
Great. And then 2019 obviously was the year you made a big breakthrough, mainly in Valencia, but also you ran pretty quick half marathons, and you were top 10 at the nationals at the cross country. Is that right?
Yeah.
Which is your favorite? But the moment you thought, God, I'm I'm really good at this. I'm, you know, I'm, I can be a nationally competitive athlete. What was the moment for you in 2019 that you felt that?
I think definitely, I think Barcelona half.
Yeah.
You know, I knew I was training well, and I was feeling probably the best I'd ever felt. And we needed to get a time to get on the elite start for London, so we needed to get under 75 minutes. So, kind of like we spoke before and said, oh, we'll go out at 5:35 pace, which would get you about 74 minutes, maybe a bit under. And I just felt so comfortable the whole way around, and just felt like just that state of flow that you get occasionally. And I ended up sort of running to consistent 5:30s, a little bit under. And you know, even felt like I had more to give at the end, and I just was in shock when I came through the finish. I just like 72:30 was not something I'd never envisioned me ever getting. So it was just kind of, it was quite emotional, like, you know, at the end. And I just, yeah, it kind of felt like everything had clicked.
Yeah.
And obviously that was, so obviously there's this shoe controversy.
Yeah.
So this was, and at that time I was running in on shoes, so yeah, there was no sort of feeling when I finished the line that some of that performance wasn't me. So, and like, I think after that I got injured, and when I came back from injury I went back into Nikes. So after that any performance has been in Nikes. So it's kind of, although I know that most of the performance is me, I still have that question in my mind, whereas that one was like, yeah, that was kind of all me, and it felt good.
It's interesting because I was chatting this morning to a friend out on a run, and we were just saying, like, for me personally, I've got no, I don't have that many qualms about wearing the Nikes, just because, like, things change, technology moves on. Like, before, you know, Roger Bannister run, he ran his 4-minute mile on a cinder track. Now we're running in these hyper incredible, you know, Mondio tracks now, and these, you know, things move on in the world. Things change, diet changes, science changes. Like, for me, if I ran, you know, 2:19, 2:20 in a pair of Nikes, or I run them, you know, or I don't run them and I run 2:25, when I'm 60, I'm going to look back and I'm going to say, you know, it's not going to bother me if I was wearing Nikes or I wasn't wearing Nikes. Maybe that's just me. But you said you feel a bit like you're not sure it's you.
Yeah, I just felt, I feel a little bit uncomfortable about it initially, just because you put them on and there's no question that they make you run faster. I can't understand it when people say, I don't think they make any difference, because for me it was mind-blowing, like, you put them on. And I'll be honest, I was hoping they'd be banned, really, because I was still doing all my training and to that point in my other shoes, just so I knew, like, you know, if for example they were banned, that I wouldn't have any worries jumping back in a race without them. So I wasn't reliant on them. So I kind of was kind of hoping that they would be, but now they're not. Like, I don't have, you know, obviously I don't have a problem wearing them, so I wear them. And I think especially at the top end of things, if you're competing to get on teams and stuff, you kind of have to go with it anyway. And you know, a real benefit I find actually is that when you wear them, you don't get the same like ache and pains in your legs after, and you recover better. So there are definite positives to them.
The Dutch top guy here is a guy called Michel Butter, and he runs, I think, 2:11, so he's going for the Olympics. And he's really upset at the moment because his colleague, who is also a New Balance runner, who won the European Championship title this year, the Belgian guy, he's always been a New Balance, but he just decided out of contract he's going to wear the Nikes. And the guy ran 2:09. And it might not have been that he ran an amazing race, but this Michel Butter now is like, what do I do? Do I break my contract? And it might not make that much difference, but mentally it will. Do you know what I mean? Like, every time you go to a race in these New Balance. So I guess that is difficult, and everybody should be allowed the same technology. But yeah, it's a hard one.
I think the other companies will catch up. I think it is putting like elite athletes in difficult positions, because you know,
particularly they rely on the sponsorship. It's his last ever chance for the Olympics. He's in his late 30s, like me. He's not going to get a chance again to run the Olympics. He's either got a break. It's very difficult. I made it a bit simplistic before. I understand that there is nuances to it, but it's for me personally, Yeah, I'd wear them.
Yeah. I mean, they are nice to run in. Running in
sprint
day is nice.
Well, now sort of coming up to this race, and it's like sort of being, do you feel like, because there's a lot of focus on women's athletics, man, because we are doing so well in marathon running. We've got sort of four or five women who are all gunning for these two or three slots in the marathon, the Olympics.
Yeah.
How does it feel to you? Do you feel a part of? Is it exciting to feel part of that? Like, do you read these articles and think, "Wow, that's me. I am close to this. I am in with a shot." How do you feel at this point in time?
I think I'm at the back of the pack of the women on there. But having said that, you know, my training's going like amazingly, better than I expected. And you never know, like, on the day, how things will go with yourself. And obviously, I can't control how other people will do. But yeah. I think, you know, realistically, Helen and I aren't aiming for the Olympics. It's not what we talk about. And we're not like, oh, you know, Olympic trials is coming up. I think for me, like, doing London is like building on Valencia. And Valencia was very much, I was kind of running a bit scared because I hadn't run a marathon for so long. And I just had so many injury setbacks that just wanted to finish. So the second half, I was just like worried that something was going to happen. So I was kind of just a bit on edge. Whereas now I've kind of laid that performance down. London is kind of more for going into it confidently. And I also didn't have fuel in Valencia, so I didn't have the drinks. And I've started kind of practicing with that, and that's making a huge difference. So
wow, Elsie, so you ran 2:33 running scared a little bit without any drinks. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, I had a couple of gels, but not the drinks, the elite drinks. I trained without them, so it was fine. But I think having tried it in training, it makes a huge difference. So I'm hoping that's gonna help loads. And then like on a side note, me and my dad are going for the Guinness World Record.
Oh so. Yeah, you already have it, don't you?
Well, we didn't like apply for it properly because it was, you know, it was a bit of a ball ache. There was just lots of things to tick off, so I just lost momentum. Do it like cause in doing it retrospectively is quite difficult. So he's like applied in advance, and we're gonna actually go for it this year.
Okay, what do you need to run? So if you run. If you run 2:32, let's say, what does he need to run to break the record?
Oh, so that gives him a bit of leeway. So he can do around 3:10. So one of us is allowed to have a bad day, is it really? So we can't both have a bad day. if I run 2:40 and he runs 3, then we'd get it.
And it's got to be father-daughter.
It's either mother, son, or father, daughter. It's like a mixed record.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool. So you're not competing against Tommy Hughes and his son, who are both running 2:30 marathons, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't be too fair.
And with this sort of this incredible rise in female athletics, does it inspire you sort of seeing other women kind of going to 27, that sort of thing? Does that give you added impetus, or does it kind of, do you look at it in a negative way and think, oh, I can ever be national champion now because this woman's pushed the bar forward? What, how does it personally affect you, the kind of this wealth of women going for these low times?
No, I think it's really inspiring. It's something kind of to look towards and see that it is possible. And you know, no one's got closer, like, you know, getting as fast as Paula Radcliffe, but it's kind of hopefully moving more in that direction, and hopefully we just get faster and faster. I think it's more inspiring than intimidating.
Yeah. And what then after? So it's obviously, if you have a blinder, Tokyo would be pretty nice, but what are you kind of going to get out of the next few years in terms of your running? What inspires you to keep pushing it?
I'd like a GB vest. I haven't had one of those yet, so this year is like trying to go for that. And when I've done London, actually, I'm going to the mountains for the summer because I don't really like track running.
Okay.
So I'm gonna. I think it's in Snowdonia. It's the marathon mountain trials for the worlds.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So that will be. So I'll finish London, probably have a bit of a rest, and then start focusing on the mountains. Obviously, I've kept in the mountain training in this build-up because I think it helps anyway for strength. But yeah, well, I'll turn my attention to that for the summer.
And where is the World Championship this year? Because last year it was Patagonia, which is pretty amazing. But where are they set to go this year for the world long distance?
Lanzarote.
Okay.
Yeah,
not quite as fun.
Not as good as Patagonia. Yeah. Maybe it'll make it less competitive. People won't really care as much.
And great. So you've got, I think actually saying that you're probably racing against one of your competitors actually in that race. I think, I'm not sure she's in there. Kirstine Welsh is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think she's also doing London this year, I think, potentially. But yeah. I'm not 100% sure. But we interviewed her a few weeks ago. So yeah, she's certainly gunning for that. But. How exciting! I personally gave the mountains a go. We met. I didn't know you very well. We saw each other at one of my worst. Yeah. Did you have a good race that day yourself? Did you enjoy it or not really?
Oh God, that was my first ever mountain race.
Oh wow!
And that was when I was coming back from fitness, and I was pretty naive going to that. Like, you know, massive respect to mountain runners. I think it's easy for road runners to look at mountain runners. Times on power of 10 or whatever and things like that and think, oh, you know, I could win that race, like these, you know, the times are, and then you actually get, you like actually compete and it's a whole different ball game. It's I think it's probably one of the hardest races I've ever run. I would you know, if you're confident on technical terrain, like, I'd advise anyone to go and give it a go and realize really how to, you know, there's a real big difference between running, you know, you think you're good at running up hills, but there's a big difference between a mountain and a hill.
Yesterday was the National Cross Country Championships, and I didn't see the women's. I didn't pick up any names for the women's, but the men, second and third place, were both mountain runners, which is quite interesting. So these guys. And obviously, Robbie Simpson's running great marathons, and I think I think people are realizing that the benefits of, like you say, multi-terrain, the challenge to your foot and that sort of thing is quite a good thing to include in your training. I shouldn't try and sell it too much because then, you know, it'll change the nature of it. And, be too busy and too big competitive,
At least it's not ruined by springy shoes at the minute.
just wait. Well, I always think that slightly with those sort of things, like, I mean, if Hoka One or On had created that shoe, would we be talking about it in the same way? Do you know what I mean? Like, On have had a carbon fiber plate in their shoes for a long time, but because they haven't got the money to sponsor Eliud Kipchoge, who's breaking 2 hours for a marathon, he doesn't get noticed. And I think I do know that there is a wild difference between On shoes and this Nike shoe, but I do wonder, kind of, Hoka have been putting these massive, great big heels on, or these, you know, soles on shoes for 10 years, and yet, you know, they kind of slip through the no one's really noticed. Yeah. So it's interesting.
But I guess it's the difference is that they actually work. I think if On shoes they worked, then I think, you know, runners would just, they would go for them, I think, and then they would take all the market from Nike. I think Nike's just created this perfect shoe, which works. So,
unfortunately, more money to Nike. Anyway, I shouldn't keep you too much longer. I should let you get back to your making of furniture on this Sunday morning. But I've got three quick fire questions to ask. The first being, if you could be running anywhere now, where would it be?
Cornwall. Always Cornwall.
Great. Yeah. I'm a Southwest boy myself, so I was hoping you weren't going to say Preston and up there in the or Stockport up there in the north. Yeah, it's got to be good. There's nothing like running along
Cornish coast paths.
Yeah. So are you from Newquay originally? Around the area?
Sort of St Agnes, I used to live. Okay. Which is just down the coast from Newquay. You can run there.
Lovely. Second question is, recommend us something. Could be anything from a book, film, podcast. Could be, or an experience that our listeners should try. Don't say mountain running. We want to keep that on the low key.
Yeah, don't try that. It's rubbish. I would probably recommend a podcast that Helen recommended to me the other week by Goldie's... Can I recommend another podcast?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, happy to.
It's from Goldie Sayers, actually. It's on BBC Sounds. It's good. It's good. She has good perspective on things. It's quite inspiring.
Okay, so. Goldie Sayers, okay. And a third question is, what's the greatest endurance performance of all time, in your opinion?
I just went to Nepal recently, and I get a bit obsessed with things. So I started obsessing about Mount Everest. and been watching loads of documentaries and reading loads of books. And I saw something about Kilian Jornet, you know, the arguably one of the best sort of mountain runners all time.
Yeah.
And he went up Everest twice in 1 week. Wow. Alpine style.
Yeah.
And if you learn about
without oxygen, Everest, wasn't it as well? Did he not have, he didn't have any?
No, he didn't, no oxygen. Wow. No fixed ropes on his own. And the first time he went up, he was unwell and wasn't happy with the time which he went up. So he went and did it again a week after. And I thought that was pretty insane.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Yeah. We did interview him a long time ago. But
did you?
Yeah. He was a nice guy. Yeah, there's lots of controversy around sort of some of his performance and things, but he's still going.
Yeah,
and
doing I think
even
that stuff. I think even that one was controversial, yeah. But I like to be, you know, positive about it.
Yeah, give people the benefit of that. Perfect.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I'll let you go put some beds together or some that sort of thing. But it's been great to chat, and good luck with the rest of your training. Hope the things go well, and we'll see you. Yeah, smashing 2:33 at the London Marathon this year.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Elsie.
Bye-bye.